Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from the UFO Congress at the Aquarius Casino Resort in Laughlin, Nevada, on the Colorado River, with Sean David Morton. We're going to call you Sean or David?
Sean.
How you doing?
Thanks. I got Sean David usually when I was in trouble or late for dinner or something.
I understand. That's kind of the way it would work, wouldn't it?
Can you hear me okay with this?
I feel like we're doing great.
You're leaning too far
into the microphone.
Right,
doing
there we go.
Well.
First off, it's an honor to be here.
Well, you had a great performance this morning.
Thank you.
And why don't you tell our audience a little bit about what you talked about today? Now, you've been around here for a while, so...
Well, Bob's been a good friend for a long time, and I love coming to the UFO World Congress. There's so many people here. Bob has a way of finding people that are always on the cutting edge, that always have new fascinating information, new contact cases. It's branched out so much from just the UFO phenomenon. I always like how UFOs become about government conspiracies and technology and prophecy and New Age thought, and it always seems that it's always on the edge.
You are pretty famous for making predictions.
Yes.
And we may get into that before it's over here.
Okay.
But what did you talk about here?
Well, today was more. It was kind of it was UFOs and prophecy. So what I which are two of my favorite subjects. What I did is that I thought I had a little more time than I did, but what I primarily talked about was we first talked about the Bible, because I don't think any discussion of UFOs, extraterrestrials, angels, divine influence on the planet can be separated from biblical philosophy. I then talked a little bit about the Billy Meyer case, where Meyer had a body of prophetic predictions that actually came true. I talked about the Carlos Diaz case, who's sort of the other end of the spectrum down in Mexico, who had some global and world prophecy. I talked a little bit about the Alice Haggerty case as well. And at the end, I kind of wrapped up with the Dr. Anthony Ribera, who was a very famous UFO contactee and scientist out of Spain, who was the co-founder of the Calypso Foundation and worked with Jacques Cousteau for many, many years, and had written about 60 books on the topics, talking about his contacts with with the UMO, who had given him some prophetic information as well.
And have you had contacts yourself?
No. I was, as an investigator into this, my background was that my dad originally worked for TRW, which at that time was kind of an arm of NASA. I grew up with a lot of scientists.
Sure.
And astronauts and people around us, because we lived in the South Bay in Southern California, all around the space program, had astronauts like Gus Grissom and Gordon Cooper and Don Eisley and all these guys who'd had experiences out in space, who knew a little bit about that the military was also carrying on a secretive space program out at places like Area 51, which at that time was called the Dockdown Strip. And then in 1990, I co-directed and produced a documentary called UFO Contactees, where we put together about 600 hours of footage with people all across the world, and worked on that for about 4 months or so.
Now when we talk about your experience with the contactees, have you changed your mind since you made that documentary, or are your ideas more reinforced today? In other words,
changed my mind about what part?
The abductees and why? And I mean, you had to have a feeling about them. As you talk to abductees, what they were about, what the whole phenomenon is about, is what I'm getting at. Did you have the answer right off, or do you figure we have an answer yet? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, my opinion is anybody that thinks that they've got either UFOs or women figured out is either crazy or a liar. And here's the thing, Jerry. The problem is that all these people had great cases. All these people had great proof. All these people had no real reason to be lying or pulling my leg or telling me a story. They certainly weren't in it for the fame. Nobody's in it for the money, really.
Right.
And at the same time, everybody told a different story. Everybody told. I guess it's like either blind man trying to describe an elephant, or you get 100 people trying to tell you what the United States is like. Some people will say it's great. Some people say it's terrible. Some people say it's good or bad or whatever.
Sure.
So. The problem,
and they could all be right.
Yeah, and that was the problem. It's ultimately running through a field of luminous weeds, if you will, that leads up to a black wall where all of these cases become a Zen cone, where there really is no answer. And you try to interview people that have been on the other side of that wall to see what it's like, and there's no coherence to the information.
Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I kind of get the impression maybe there's a lot of things going on.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's a bunch of different things. That, on the one hand, you have the Greys, which seem to be abducting people and have an interest in, that seem to have some kind of interest in genetic material, for example, some kind of breeding program, if you will. Then you've got Pleiadians, who aren't really doing abductions, but seem to be contacting people to give them information about the Earth and about the environment and maybe prophecies and predictions. You have the Umo, for example.
Let's talk about the Umo a little bit. Tell our audience a little bit about that.
The Umo case was actually, Wendell Stevens wrote two books on it called Contact from Umo, Volumes 1 and 2. These were co-written with Dr. Antonio Ribera. Again, Ribera had written 60 books on UFOs, oceanography, tectonic platelets. He was Jacques Cousteau's partner for 30-plus years, setting up the Calypso Foundation. His contention was that a group of beings from the Wolf 426 star system from a planet called Umo had landed in Spain in the Pyrenees Mountains sometime around 1953, and that this group had established a base on Earth, and that they were disguising themselves as Scandinavian scientists, and that they were in contact with people in the scientific community around the world.
Disguising themselves as Scandinavian scientists, they're humanoid.
They're human, they look just like us.
Basically like Nordics.
They look just like us. The only difference is that they have, they're very sensitive to light, so they wear the very, very thick glasses. They're very sensitive to touch, so they wore very thick padded gloves. And they,
in the summertime, they'd stand out.
Yeah, they wear this kind of black outfits, very light skin, and at the same time, they communicated telepathically. So, in order for them to communicate, they had voice boxes implanted in their throats because their larynxes had atrophied. So, when they spoke, they talked sounded like Daleks from Doctor Who, basically.
Yeah.
And but what they would do is that they would find a scientist that was working on a particular project of interest. That scientist would get to a point of where they would hit a wall, if you will, a block, and then they'd contact the scientist and say, we're a colleague. Have you thought about looking at this equation or looking at something like this or sending him a letter that would give him the clues to the next step? And supposedly, we discovered the AIDS virus through the Umo. Certain technological advances have occurred because of this. And so Ribera told a number of very interesting stories of his own physical and, I guess, telephonic contact with these beings and this group of scientists that were also in contact with them as well that seemed to be very concerned with amplifying the medical and health sciences knowledge of the United States. The world.
The world.
Because they did not want to give us anything that had to do with energy because that could be turned into a weapon and we basically, it's like given a 5-year-old in a sandbox a loaded .45.
Now you've been in this whole area, in this realm, so to speak, for a long time now.
Okay.
Do you have any projects going right now you'd like to talk about, anything that jumps out?
Right now is I just got finished writing my my first novel. It's a novel of espionage and intrigue called Black Seraph. It's kind of like Malachi Martin's Windswept House or The Da Vinci Code meets James Bond, if you will. It's like a combination between Dan Brown and James Patterson. And so the book's, it's selling very well. It's climbing up the charts on Amazon. And I've written a film based on the book as well that we're talking to Pierce Brosnan about doing. We've also got a documentary in the works called Secret Prophecies of the Pyramids. So we're talking about going back to Egypt, and Pierce Brosnan is interested in narrating it. And so that's where we're at right now.
I'm sorry.
I published my newsletter, Delphi Associates newsletter,
right.
And I've been using remote viewing to predict the financial markets and have a core group of investors, an investment club I run called the Delphi Associates Investment Group, and we've been doing very, very well predicting and making money from the foreign exchange markets.
So you definitely do prophecies in the short term as well as the long term. In other words,
yes,
your newsletter points out things. How do you get these ideas that they're coming down? I mean, what facts do you use? Are you in communication with somebody or what?
No, I've been doing remote viewing for probably 30 plus years now. I pioneered a lot of remote viewing techniques like associative remote viewing.
Tell me what that is.
Remote viewing is just a,
I know what remote viewing is.
Associative remote viewing is a way to predict, say, the outcome of horse races, roulette wheels, any form of gambling is a way of predicting the outcome of a random number generator, like a roulette wheel or numbers on horses.
Well, I'm surprised you had time to get upstairs.
Yeah, well, it's, I actually won a bunch of money last night doing the playing blackjack. But the way I do it is that I've been predicting the earthquakes and earth changes and all by working with maps, what we call cartomancy, which is you work with the maps, and I can actually feel energy coming from maps, which has allowed me to be very accurate in predicting earthquakes and various natural catastrophes, both on in the United States and the rest of the world. And I've taken that ability and moved it to the next level to be able to, as I said, predict the financial markets. And right now we're managing about a $4.5 million fund and doing fabulously well.
The stock market took a big jump, or dip, actually.
3%.
Yeah, right.
Anything, more like a burp.
More burps in order, I'm sure, down the line. But this was a pretty big one, pretty big burp.
Well, okay, it was less than 3%, which is not even considered an official correction. It's people have to understand that a 400-point drop in the market...
But as a burp, it was...
When the market is 12,750 is nothing, it's basically not even a sneeze.
So,
it's kind of a runny nose.
You don't see any major problems here?
I do, but it's not going to happen until you'll see a major readjustment in the markets between about May 15th and May 30th, and then a rise in the markets over the summer, along with the rise in the price of gold and silver. And then I think the major readjustment that we have to look at for the possibility of a massive financial crash is coming up in November of this year.
That early?
Yes, but you'll see the markets go to...
Now, when we talk about a major financial crash, would that be because maybe we're going from the dollar to the euro or some other way, what's happening?
That there would be a shift of power away from the dollar towards the euro, and then that would mean that you would have oil actually being traded in the euro rather than petrodollars, because oil is the only thing that's really propping up the U.S. dollar right now. And if they start trading oil in euros, the whole economy of the United States could go into a massive freefall.
And you think that may happen in November?
Yes, because what we're seeing is a shifting of power away from the United States towards the European Union.
Well, you talked about this burp we just had. I thought that was a signal from China myself.
Well, remember, a lot of it was a click from it was a computer glitch that was one of the reasons why it dropped.
Oh, you really
so
think it was?
Well, $630 billion just disappeared, but it was a computer glitch, and then the markets recovered. As I said,
sounds like a cover story to me, but I don't know.
A cover story?
Yeah.
There's some stuff going on with the Chinese. There's a lot of stuff going on with the Chinese.
Anyway, the whole point is that what should people do to protect themselves if this is going to happen in November? What can you buy? Pay off your real estate?
Well, that'd be one way to do it, but then again,
who can do that, right?
It also means, gold is going to be, gold commodities, copper, silver, I think is going to be the, silver is going to be the big money maker, because silver's the one you'll see go to $30 an ounce before you see something like gold go to $1,000 or $1,500, which is some people are predicting gold at $3,000 an ounce, and I think that's just outrageous. When you get to the level of $800 to $1,000, gold just begins to appear from out of everywhere. Commodities are excellent. Having your money in foreign currencies like euros actually is a very good thing as well. But that has little to do with the UFO prophecy stuff we're talking
right,
about.
Right. Well, we will get to that in a little bit.
Sure.
We're going to take a break first. You just heard Sean David Morton making an astounding prophecy. He is a man of prophecy, as everyone knows. And we'll be right back. This is Jerry Pippen. Don't go away. It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Files on JerryPippen.com. This is Jerry Pippen. We're at the UFO Congress, and we are at the Aquarius Resort Casino. And a man who knows not only the markets, but evidently you won some money at 21 last night.
a few hundred dollars of meager. Yes, I just wanted to play some
now,
hands.
But
it's all about energy.
Let's
it's all about
get
energy.
To some of the prophecies about UFO connections.
Sure.
What are you? What's going to happen? I mean, I keep hearing the end's here. Is it?
Well,
for the whole world.
Here's the challenge. Let's take the UFO aspect of this. In certain in certain cases, you have UFO prophecies that talk about the end of the world or a planetary flip or a shift or. But there have been very, very few cases where UFO prophecy has been right or useful. It almost seems as though a lot of the prophecies that were given seem to be given as a way to manipulate and entice people to do whatever it is they want them to do. That's one of the reasons why I picked, for example, the only case that I found that there was any legitimacy to the prophecies, where the prophecies were printed, where things were set down and then things happened, were in the opening stages of the Billy Meier case between 75 and about 77, 78 or so. But again, Meier wasn't really doing any good with these. Meier would put these in a bank vault, and when a prophecy would come true, he would get the papers out of the bank vault,
and
pull
say,
them out,
I told you.
And say, see, I told you so,
yeah,
and then put them back in the bank vault, not tell anybody really about what was going on. The only way we have any information about that is, of course, Colonel Wendell Stevens, who just walked by here on his way home. Wendell managed to peek at some of his notes, write these things down, and get them out there and sort of get them published, which is the only reason why we had a record of some of these prophetic predictions. Now, he's been predicting an earthquake in San Francisco now for 30 years, and giving specifics on this prediction. Whereas the only time frame on the prediction is he saw very futuristic looking cars. He claims he actually went to the future with the Pleiadians and saw very futuristic looking cars that looked like bubbles that actually had like glass roofs, and these roofs had sort of a tinted phototonic glass that, when the sun shined on it, the glass would actually smoke over. And there were cars just like that being introduced at the LA Car Show this last December.
So the time may be near.
Well, yeah, but the rest of the prophecies are, I point to the Alice Haggerty case simply because Alice was given information about a world in which there was no power, no electricity, sort of a Mad Max kind of reality. But this was information that was given to her in order for them to take genetic material, literally like eggs, and crossbreed them on the ships and create like races of beings actually on the craft. Then there's the Carlos Diaz case. And Carlos Diaz is a contactee outside of Mexico City.
Right.
And in his case, he doesn't have a name for these beings. They're just called the Amigos or the Friends. They claim to be taking materials and creating these libraries, these dimensional libraries of insect and animal and flora and fauna and music and all kinds of things just in case the Earth goes through some kind of ecological disaster. Now, the one warning universally from all the ET contactees has been about nuclear war, has been about humanity wiping itself out. And there has been information that if there was a nuclear conflict of some kind or a global thermonuclear conflagration, that at that point in time, the UFOs would step in and stop it simply because it would destroy the Earth. And apparently that radiation would bleed into other dimension and destroy many other Earths in multiple realities. The one last thing I would say, you want to say what's going to happen ultimately. The only thing that we really have set in stone, literally, is the prophecies of the Great Pyramid of Giza. And in Giza, over what they call the Messianic Eve, which is a stone inside the pyramid, it's the only hieroglyph in all the pyramids, which is a raised semicircle on the Eve, which is in the entrance to the King's Chamber, seems to point to a period of time where in 2034, approximately, there is a great light or a sign in the sky in which there is some kind of massive divine intervention in human history. And after that point, war seems to be put to rest, humanity begins to get along, and by approximately 2050, 2055 or so, the world is not only rebuilt, but is entering the beginning of a massive new golden age under some kind of divinely sent messianic world leader, which plays into much of the Christian
tradition.
It's
more or less a biblical philosophy, in a way.
Well, it's a biblical philosophy, but remember, we're talking about something in stone in the sacred geometry of the Great Pyramid
I understand,
that predates the biblical records by by many hundreds, if not thousands, of years. But it shows that maybe the biblical records came from an interpretation of the sacred geometry of the Great Pyramid.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where did it come from? And you just answered the question.
That's the remarkable thing. When were the pyramids built? 10,000, 5,000, 10,000, 100,000 years ago? That's the big question. Or do they just keep getting rebuilt in the same location?
That's an interesting thought.
That's the current archaeology tells us now that the current pyramids are built on older structures. And that's establishment archaeology.
Now, you're pretty optimistic then that nothing's going to happen in 2012.
I didn't say that.
No, I was reading words into your mouth.
Okay, well, all right.
Then you're not.
No, there's all kinds of things that may happen in 2012. There are, let me give you the biggest things from the scientific to the prophetic realm
of what we're worried
about.
Okay.
The United States military is the most worried about a planetary or polar shift. Either an electromagnetic shift of the poles between 2012 and 2014, or literally a physical flipping of the planet. There was a mapping that was done of the polar regions, the North Polar regions, in the late 1940s. And they found that true north and magnetic north were sliding, that magnetic north was actually coming closer and closer to true north. They said that this was because of atomic testing that had knocked the Earth slightly off its axis, and that this wobble was going to get worse and worse and worse. And the RAND Corporation put out a report in the 1960s that said they were afraid of a polar slip, as they called it, sometime between 2012 and 2014. That's the military scientific RAND Corporation.
Right. In other words, a slip instead of a shift.
Well, the slip would be that they built, in Santa Monica, they built a huge mock scale model of the Earth. And they did a series of experiments where electromagnetic north and true north met. In 40% of those experiments, the entire planet lolled over on its side. In 60% of those experiments, the magnetic north and magnetic south shifted. In other words, north became south, south became north. These same experiments are being run via computers at Hyderabad University in India, and they're coming up with approximately the same thing with this, what they call kind of a global superstorm, if you will, coming up in 2012 to 2014. If you look at the Great Pyramid of Giza, the Great Pyramid of Giza has a section in an area called the Pit, which is about 150 feet below the pyramid itself, where there's a trough that they call the River of Fire of a series of events that seem to occur between 2012 and 2014 that sweep much of mankind into this hole, so much so that certain parts of the planet will not recover, and human civilization, we know, it will not be established until about 2025. Then you look at the Mayan calendar, and it's kind of interesting because there's two calendars now. There's the Aztec and the Mayans. The Aztec calendar ends October 28th of 2011, and they seem to feel that an year of Armageddon, as we know it, is going to occur this year, that by November of 2007 to 2008 is what they call the Night of Armageddon, or a phase of Armageddon in which civilization or material civilization begins to break apart so that something based on the spiritual, alternative thought, energy, medicine, all these things begin to pop up between late 2007 to 2008. Then ending with the Mayan calendar, which is December 23rd of 2012, the Mayan calendar then has the sun aligning directly with the center of the galaxy on that date, claiming that there's going to be a massive galactic pulse and that this will have an ascension global consciousness. Now, the question is, what really happens with that? Does it simply mean that we can see into the fifth dimension, that we can see ghosts or spirits, that we can see auras, that we can heal the sick? Do we all become Jedi Knights, if you will? I mean, that's the real question as to what is the ascension of humanity going to look like? Does it happen to everybody, or does it happen to a small core group of people that then teaches the rest of the world over a much longer period of time?
We could talk for hours.
We can, because you're such an interesting and handsome man.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And a man is a PR genius.
Who's that? Me?
I
should write all your blurbs for you, Jerry.
Right. The reason I say that is you know how to get the host to like you.
plus that $20 I slipped you before the interview.
Yeah,
so
that wasn't bad either.
Yeah.
We're about out of time.
Okay.
We got a lot of people to do.
Okay.
And the newsletter, they can get that.
The Delphi Associates newsletter, the newsletter you have to have today because it tells you all about tomorrow. It's $65 for 12 issues. It's a full-color magazine that we put out. We don't carry any advertising, so it's all information. The website is www.delphiassociates.org. That's delphiassociates.org. And you can find out about the Delphi Associates Investing Group. You can find out about the newsletter. You can find out about books and materials, all from DelphiAssociates.org.
And we put a link on our website.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's great. I've been getting a lot of responses from that.
And now, as far as your movie and TV, I mean, you're a Hollywood guy.
Hollywood guy.
What are you working on? Now, what's coming out immediately? We talked about it a little, but we need to leave
I'm sort of the book, Get the Book, Black Seraph. And we're just, right now things are, there's just irons in the fire that are just
But the book is out or will be?
The book's out. You can get it on Amazon.com. Amazon, Black Seraph is the name of the book by Sean David Morton and Wayne Haley, who's my writing partner. And it's a great action-adventure novel. We're trying to take the truth and put it into a fantastic sort of...
So people will understand it and swallow get a little distribution.
And so we don't get shot, actually. And so we can make a movie out of it, and so we can do a lot of different things with it.
You have any interference from the government?
Nope.
I mean, I keep hearing about it.
I was going to pay a guy to hunt me down and to make me feel a little better. The only time the government really messed with me was when I was messing around with Area 51. And I got shot at a couple of times, and they shot my camera once. They pointed some guns at me another time.
We got a minute left. Find anything at Area 51 of interest?
Well, yeah. We were the ones that blew the lid off the whole place, and I filmed the base for the first time in 91. Yep. You were just asking me about the government interference.
You
kind of hit the delete key on my life.
I kind of wanted to let people know that I was aware of that. That's the reason I got into that. But what do you think's happening up there now?
A lot of things, mostly legitimate. They're working on ramjets, scramjets, electromagnetic engines. Most of the UFO saucer anti-gravity stuff got moved to Area 6413 in Utah. It's been spread out around the country. And it went from them only testing ships back in 91 to my wife and I actually watching UFO disc-shaped craft be used as part of a war game actually in May of 2000. So
actually saw that.
Yeah, we saw... There were three helicopters, all with like discs in between the helicopters, and they put on a show for us for about 45 minutes. It was very nice.
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay.
Thanks for having me, sir.
Thank you very much. This is Jerry Pippin. On behalf of Roberta Scott, our on-location producer, and our technical producer, Jane Swartley. Until next time, cheers.
The doors are finally open at shopjerrypippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features 3 different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at shopjerrypippin.com.